Well, this morning we bring to a close the three-Sunday series, the three-week series of 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and 1 Corinthians chapter 3, where we bring the season of Epiphany to an end. And just by way of review, what we've been talking about for these past couple of weeks is Paul's letter to the Corinthians, in which he writes a letter to this church that is dealing with a crisis. They are fracturing up into at least four different groups, each little group being associated with who they feel they want to pay attention to, whether Paul, the founding pastor of the church, or Apollos, his successor, or the ones who are being more spiritual and saying, well, Peter, the guy who was the first among the apostles, and those who are really spiritual saying, look, we just follow Jesus. And this problem comes about because the Corinthians were so enamored with this notion of wisdom, this Greek concept of wisdom, that they were applying that to this, and it was necessitating that they show who was more right than the rest. And this started to create this fracturing of unity. And we went on last week to show that this is a real challenge, because if there is a fracture in unity over this when things are going well, it will become almost impossible for the church to maintain unity when they delve into the depths of what it is that Jesus is teaching. If they wish to maintain this superficial black and white view of all things, then the moment they dive into that and start to get into the grayness of life and faith coming together, man, if they're already divided when things are going fine, it is not going to be possible to maintain unity when the fur hits the fan, when they start dealing with these deeper thoughts and deeper questions. And so to close the passage last week, Paul made the analogy that the church is like a field. The whole idea of the field or a garden is to flourish, whether you're growing wheat in it or flowers as a flower garden. He said, I was one who planted the seed. My successor, Apollos, is one who watered it, but the issue is God made it grow. And he emphasized that this idea of picking and choosing church leaders to be the ones that you make your heroes is a bad idea, because they are merely servants, all on the same team, serving the same purpose of doing what must be done for that field or that garden to flourish. And so it doesn't make any sense to say whether Paul was more important because he planted or Apollos was more important because he watered. That's the wrong question to ask. Instead, they're all together on the same team for the benefit of seeing the church, the people of God, flourish as a field. And then after that, he launches into a new analogy, and this is what you heard in our reading this morning. He says, and you are also God's building. And so now we're going to this new picture, this new image to build off of. And Paul says, I, like a master builder, laid a foundation on which I built, and now others are building too. And that foundation is established. That foundation is Jesus Christ. And so what he's saying is, I came into Corinth, and there was no church here. The gospel had not been proclaimed. There was nobody worshiping God in this way. So I came in, made that proclamation about the gospel of Jesus Christ, established the foundation for this church that's there now. That foundation is Jesus Christ. And I built the first story of the building, if you will, on that foundation. And then he says, now another is building on it, speaking of Apollos, or perhaps even another successor. So now Apollos is like building the second story of the building. If we're talking about a third successor, well, that third pastor in Corinth is now building the third floor. And the whole image is that this building continues to grow and develop and get higher and higher. And this is due to the fact of those that come in to continue to preach the gospel and to teach the people and to give guidance. They keep building on this thing that Paul started. But again, the foundation is Jesus Christ. The foundation is always and only Jesus Christ. And then he goes on to describe that the building that is done by these church leaders, how he might have a different character. You will have those who build with gold and silver and precious stones, and those who would build with wood and hay and straw. The implication that one set of building materials is reflective of a better job than the other set of building materials. And he says that the work of each will be revealed at the day, speaking of the day of judgment, the day when Christ returns, when he establishes his kingdom on earth and everything is laid bare and it's called what it is. You know, a spade is a spade and this is good and this is not good and all of that. When that day comes, then he uses the analogy of fire coming, where the fire, and fire, by the way, is something that can purify and it can consume, it can cure and harden and it can destroy. When that fire comes, anything that was built on the history of this church, layer upon layer, that happened to be made of wood and hay and straw would be consumed. That which was made of gold and silver and precious stones, of course, would remain. The key point that Paul is making here is that it is God who determines that. It is God who makes the call about what happens and what it is that a particular church leader had done with the church. And so he's saying to the Corinthians, look it, if you're going to be in a hurry of trying to say whether Paul is better than Apollos or whether the next guy is or the guy after that or whoever is giving leadership, you're completely missing the point. Number one, that's not even up to you to make that call. Because each church leader that comes in to build on this thing that's founded on Jesus Christ is going to do what they do, and it's ultimately going to be seen at the end of all, whether it's good or bad or indifferent or whatever, but that's actually not your call to make. Furthermore, it is not up to a successive pastor to make that decision about his or her predecessors either. See, Paul now goes to the middle portion of this passage, which causes a little bit of concern, because it says, first of all, in a very positive way, do you not know that you are God's temple and that God's Spirit dwells in you? And then he says, if anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy that person. For God's temple is holy and you are that temple. Now, when we hear those words, what leap out at us is this idea of God would destroy somebody. What would that look like and who is he talking about? Well, what he is talking about are the church leaders that continue to come into Corinth and to continue to build on that which was already established through Paul's laying of a foundation on Christ and Apollos carrying on in the second floor and whoever does the third floor and the fourth floor and so on. He is making this warning against the human Christian leaders that would give leadership to the church in Corinth. And so, when it comes to a reflection on the history of the church, Paul is saying there cannot be any pastor who goes there and says, you know what, the third and fourth story, the third and fourth pastors you guys had, they didn't know what they were doing. They're completely off their rails. Let's just go ahead and get rid of those couple of floors, and we'll just get rid of that altogether and just rebuild on top of that. Paul says you can't do that. That would be destroying the temple of God. That would be eliminating part of the history, part of what has been experienced in the church. If it was wood, hay, and stubble, that will become plain when the time comes, but that's going to be God's thing. It's not going to be you to do it. Furthermore, he makes it clear if any Christian leader was going to try to say, you know what, let's just reset all together and just, okay, forget this whole enterprise, it's going wrong, we're just going to build on a different foundation altogether, that too will be problematic because the foundation was already laid. The foundation is Jesus Christ. There's no other foundation upon which the church can be built. And so any church leader that would try to say, you know what, it's time to depart from this and restart altogether is causing destruction. Now, what does it mean that God would destroy that person being such a church leader? We can't get into that this morning. But what I want you to understand is why on earth such vivid language would be used of God by Paul in the first place. Though we might not like to hear the idea that God would destroy that person, what is behind that? Why is it said so firmly, so strongly, so scarily, if that is a word? Especially as a church leader, right? If he's talking to church leaders, that's where I'm standing right now, and that would be a warning to me. Here's what's behind it. We go back to what he said just a verse before. Do you not know that you collectively, you plural, y'all, are God's temple, and God's Spirit dwells in you? Now, the church is, of course, the people, the assembly of believers. It's not the building itself, though we call it a church, but it's the people. And the people in the church in Corinth are already having a history to them. They are already part and parcel from when Paul began and Apollos took over and whoever comes next and all of that. And any attempt to try to get rid of part of that history is going to necessarily affect and damage the people who are there, who make up the temple. Remember, the building is a metaphor. You are the building, Paul says to the Corinthians. And so any attempt to remove that history is going to be damaging people, removing people. And yet these are people in whom God's Spirit dwells. So for anyone to presume to try to do that is in a very dire circumstance. Attempting to do something that only God could do. And what human leader could ever presume to do so themselves? What is behind this warning that Paul gives, that he says God would be making, is God's tremendous love and care and concern for the people that are his temple and in whom God has given God's Spirit. And it is out of God's desire to protect the people that are precious to God that such a warning would come. Imagine with me, which shouldn't be too terribly difficult, that you were driving towards Banff, maybe towards Lake Louise. And as you're driving along Highway 1 there, you happen to notice a little bit of wildlife on the side, and it's getting pretty close to the road. Hey, let's check that out. So you pull over, get out of the car to take some pictures, and you find out it's a bear. Oh, right on, look at that. We're up close to a bear. Let's take some pictures, and taking pictures of the bear. And then you hear a noise behind you, and you find that there's a couple of bear cubs behind you. You know that you're in trouble, because that's Mama Bear over there, and you're between her and her cubs. And she does not want anybody to mess with her cubs. And so as a result, in order to ensure that her cubs are protected, she's going to go after you unless you make it clear that you are nowhere near, even close, to damaging those cubs. When the mama bear does that, we never blame her for it. We don't say that this mama bear somehow has gotten this bloodthirst in her mind and in her nostrils, that all she wants to do is destroy human beings, that she's out of control, she must be put down or whatever. No, she's attacking what she perceives to be a threat to the cubs that she cares for dearly. It is her love and care and concern for her cubs that causes her to take an aggressive posture towards someone who might be damaging the cubs. In the same way, God is the mama bear to all of the cubs that make up God's church. And God is not interested in seeing harm come to the ones that he loves and cares about and is concerned for. And so this warning is saying if any human church leader presumes to come in and take a place that would then bring harm and damage to his church, that one better watch out because of the incredible love and care God has for the people. Now this passage ends reminding the Corinthians that they ought not to deceive themselves into thinking that they are possessing this great wisdom because they know which of their church leaders are the best. He says, don't even go there. In fact, if you think that's wisdom, you should become fools so that you can become wise. Because the scriptures tell us, and it's clear, that God's wisdom is foolishness to human beings, and God's and human beings' wisdom is foolishness to God. So the better thing is to get a hold of God's wisdom, that which is revealed to God, what God is revealing. That's what we have to hold on to, not what we have come up with. And any attempt to try to put a hierarchy of church leaders into place and then draw our attention to that is going to be shaky ground, because they're simply human beings. That's why he said, what is Paul? What is Apollos? We're merely servants. Don't elevate human leaders to that extent. Let no one boast about human leaders, he says. We said before that the letters in the New Testament, the epistle to the Corinthians, to Ephesians, Philippians, Galatians, all of these, they were not written to us, but they were written for us. And so we can take these letters and now consider how would this apply if it was being written to the Church of the Good Shepherd here in Calgary. We have a 9-story building right now, to extend that analogy. The foundation was established over 60 years ago on Jesus Christ. Archie McMullen is the one who established that and built the first floor. I'm the 9th priest in the history of this parish, so this is the 9th floor. And I trust that there'll be 9 more floors at least to come. as the building continues to be built upon. We would not do well to look back over the previous nine priests, or eight, previous eight priests, and try to presume that we can evaluate, well, you know, that priest there, he was only building with wood and hay and straw. You know, but this priest was definitely doing gold and silver and precious stones. That's not our call to make. And it is not my role to try to eliminate any of the history of the parish and my notion that somehow I know better. And it's certainly not my role to try to just reset everything and build on a different foundation, because the foundation's already been laid. We as a parish, instead, are to understand in the depths of our being that God is saying, do you not know that you are God's temple? Do you not know that God's Spirit dwells in you? By extension, then, do you not know that God loves you with an absolutely righteous jealousy for you and wants nothing more than to protect you and to keep you and to see you grow and develop and become what it is that you are to be? In a recent edition of the Anglican Journal, there's an article that was written that was saying we might want to be mindful of the fact that the Anglican Church of Canada is basically going to be done by 2040 or 2050. That's what it says in the Anglican Journal. I would suggest to you, if you have a copy of that newspaper, that you should take that article and clip it out carefully. Make sure you get every word, clip it out, cut it out, and all that. Be very careful with it, and then take it to your fireplace and light it on fire. Because that is not what we see in this passage of Scripture. It is not what we see Jesus saying. In Matthew chapter 16, Jesus said, I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. Now, we have to set some parameters here. We cannot say that Jesus then said, I will build the church of the Good Shepherd, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. We can't make it that focused, because Jesus is talking about the church universal, the church all around the world. But we recognize that the church universal is made up of a whole pile of individual congregations like this one. So though we cannot say Jesus' words are specifically for the Church of the Good Shepherd, nevertheless, the Church of the Good Shepherd can count itself among what Jesus is promising. And here's what he's saying. If the foundation remains Jesus Christ, if we continue to build on that foundation and each church leader that comes in continues to do a conscientious job of carrying on that tradition and that growth and that development and progress and all of these things, we will see the church continue to grow and build up. Because a church leader that does that, recognizing that the church is God's and not theirs, cannot help but see success. Because what are we to do? We are to be a worshiping community, acknowledging God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength. We are to be a serving community, loving our neighbors as ourselves. As we continue doing that, which is the very heartbeat of God, then we find ourselves still accomplishing what the goal is, what the mission is, what it is we are here to do and to be. When we try to step aside from that, that is where there can be concern. That is where there might be a concern about what's going to happen with the Anglican Church of Canada or even this parish. But does it not make sense when we really understand that what is being said is that you are God's temple? You don't belong to yourself. You belong to God. You are Jesus's possession. You're his. And he treasures his possession. He is not interested in seeing harm come to it. Now, please understand, in this whole context, we're talking about harm from within church leaders. We know that there are many times where a church is persecuted from outside. Even in this world today, there are churches that are erased from the map because of harsh persecution. We understand that that happens. That's not what Paul is talking about here. He is talking about this internal conflict, the division that was happening in Corinth and could happen anywhere else, and what can happen by church leaders who are doing inappropriate things or whatever. And he's getting it all down to this foundational piece, that you belong to Christ, and Christ belongs to God. And there's no reason for us to think that we, as Christ's possession, are to ever believe that somehow we are to be lost, dissipated in the mists of time. As we conscientiously build on the foundation that is Jesus, we can find ourselves continuing to flourish. continuing to fulfill our mission in our part of this world. The Church of the Good Shepherd is but one of 71 other churches in the Diocese of Calgary. And in our section of Calgary, from the Bow River in the north to Glenmore Trail in the south, from Crowchild in the east to the city limits in the west, there are 35 other churches. One of them happens to be another Anglican church as well. We have a part to play in the vast scheme of things. But as we keep our focus on the fact that we belong to Christ, that we are Christ's temple, Christ's people, upon whom he lavished grace and gave us the gift of his Spirit and promises to walk with us from here on through, there is no reason for us to be concerned about our future. In fact, that ought to put us in a position of recognizing even more our dependence upon him, our reliance upon him, that when the opportunity comes that we might bring our concerns to the throne room of grace, or we might be given an invitation to have the power of God at work to perhaps provide healing or direction or wisdom or whatever we need, that we ought to take that opportunity because it's the work of Christ for the people he loves. You are God's temple. God's Spirit dwells in you. He loves you and wants to protect you and wants to see you grow and succeed through this day and through this year and through the years to come. Let us embrace that knowledge and ensure that we are ones who continue on living in light of that truth for his name's sake. And then ultimately, necessarily, for our own benefit, because that's how God works. Amen.